Thank you very much for inviting me to give this talk here. It's been a very interesting workshop so far, and I hope to continue it. So that's the title of my talk. So the motivation of this will be to introduce some techniques that physicists use to model quantum effects in plasma physics. The outline of the talk is here. Well, I will first introduce the topic and the motivations for studying it. Then I'm going to ask myself the question, when, in what situations are quantum effects important in plasma? And then the main part of the talk will be the introduction of some types of mathematical models that are currently used to model and to simulate numerically also quantum effects in plasma. And I will mainly concentrate on three types of quantum models. The first one based on the Wigner representation of quantum mechanics, then the Hartree model, which is known also under several other names, depending on what scientific community you belong to, and then some quantum hydrodynamic or quantum fluid models. And I will also mention, actually, simple laws of Poisson equations that can also be applied to a certain extent to the study of quantum plasmas. Then I will give a few examples and applications of all this stuff, mainly taken from standard problems in plasma physics, such as the linear propagations of plasma waves in an infinite medium, or the two-stream instability, for example. And then I will devote some time at the end of the talk to the more complex problem of simulating finite systems, which are, of course, more pertinent for real applications. And I will have in mind applications to nanoparticles and thin metal films. Films, because we will concentrate essentially on one-dimensional problems. So as a film is an infinite plane, or it can be modeled as an infinite plane, 1D problems, 1D models will be appropriate in that case. And then I will conclude my talk and show some future developments. So, introduction. There are essentially two reasons why we want to study these problems. First, we can ask ourselves a number of fundamental questions. How are the kinetic equations that govern traditional classical plasma physics modified by the presence of quantum effects? Secondly, for example, what happens to typical classical plasma effects such as Debye screening, linear and nonlinear Landau damping, plasma waves, sound waves, and a lot of other effects that we are all well aware of. And then there are a number of important applications that we just mentioned too. The first one to semiconductors, because of the ongoing miniaturization of electronic devices, the De Broglie wavelengths of the charge carriers can nowadays become comparable to the size to the size of the device. And when this happens, of course, quantum effects will start to play a role. That won't be the application I'm going to concentrate on. That's why the second one I devoted a little bit more space. And the second one is maybe more recent, is all the physics on the nanoscale size. All these nanoscale size objects, such as metallic clusters, thin metal films, nanoparticles, etc. Essentially, with the example of metal clusters, for example, clusters are objects that are composed of a small number of metallic atoms. In this case, you also have different types of clusters, but we are concentrating on metallic ones. Small number being between a few tens to several thousand or even 10,000 atoms. Now, the valence electrons in these metal clusters behave basically as an electron plasma that is globally neutralized by the presence of an ionic background. And so that's where the contact with plasma physics comes. Nevertheless, there are a lot of differences. For example, the particle density, the electron density in these metal clusters is very large. It's a typical metallic density, so 10 to the 28 particles per cubic meters, approximately. And another difference is that, contrarily to ordinary metals, there is no crystalline structure, so you don't have effects such as block waves, and similar things, energy bands, and it's a kind of amorphous metal, so this metal cluster. They don't have the crystalline structure that is found in ordinary metals. But well, as we have seen, they have a lot of properties that that are similar to standard plasma physics. Now, when are quantum effects important? Well, all this applies, all the stuff that's on this graph, on this view graph, applies as well to plasma as to ordinary neutral gases. It's just the same kind of reasoning. And the main thing to do is to look at the thermal de Broglie wavelength, which is somehow the size of a quantum particle, which is defined in this way for a typical particle that has a velocity equal to the thermal velocity in the plasma. Now, of course, quantum effects become important when this wavelength becomes of the same order as the interparticle distance, n to the minus 1/3, which can be written in this way, n lambda b 3 larger than 1. So that's the condition to have significant quantum effects in the gas or in the plasma. Now, if you do a little bit of algebra on this expression here, you can see that this condition exactly corresponds to the condition that the temperature of the plasma must be smaller than the Fermi temperature, which is defined in this equation here. And in the same equation, I also define the Fermi energy, simply the Fermi temperature times the Boltzmann constant, and also the Fermi velocity, Vf. And you see that the Fermi temperature is essentially a measure of the density of the plasma, because all the rest are constants, h bar, m, and numerical constants. It's a measure of the density, and you see that the larger the density, the easier it is to verify this inequality. So for large density, that's why for large density, the plasma is essentially quantum, and the gas. I mean, that's exactly the same argument. So we have our first dimensionless parameter, which can be expressed either in this way or in that way, and it tells us whether the plasma that we are studying is or is not quantum, whether quantum effects are or are not important in the plasma that we are considering. So that's one thing. Now we are looking for another number of dimensionless parameters. We are going to concentrate on collisionless regimes, or mean field regimes, as they are more frequently called in solid-state physics. Like for classical plasmas, we all know about that, but I'll review it very briefly in this view graph. Well, we can define the coupling parameter as the ratio of the interaction energy to the kinetic energy. And for a classical plasma, the interaction energy is given by the Coulomb energy, and the kinetic energy is simply given by the thermal energy, Boltzmann constant times the temperature. And then it's easy to define the classical coupling parameter in this way, and we see that it can be expressed as the inverse of the number of particles contained in the Debye volume, like this, to a certain power. It doesn't matter for this discussion. And if we introduce like all the parameters that are in here, we see that actually it depends on the density and on the temperature. So the collective effects are dominant. We are in the mean field regime when the classical coupling parameter is small, and when this parameter becomes of order 1, two-body correlations, collisions, start to become important. And we also see that classical plasmas, of course, are more collisionless in the regime of low densities and high temperatures. So that we knew already, so we've defined another dimensionless parameter that we are going to use later, that is classical coupling parameter. Now we want to do the same thing for a quantum plasma. And it's a very similar procedure. So we are in the case now where the temperature is smaller than the Fermi temperature. Before bothering with the quantum coupling parameter, let's define some typical time, velocity, and length scale in a quantum plasma. But for the time scale, typical time scale is actually the same as in a classical plasma. It's still the inverse of the plasma frequency. We are completely ignoring magnetic fields. I haven't said that, so it's purely electrostatic plasma. So the typical time scale is the plasma frequency. Typical velocity scale, unsurprisingly, it's given by the Fermi velocity that we've already seen before, which I rewrite here, and I say again, it's a sort of measure of the density of the gas or of the plasma. And then with these two quantities, we can easily construct a typical length scale, which I call the Fermi length, lambda f here, which is simply the ratio of the Fermi velocity to the plasma frequency. Now, the Fermi velocity, actually, it's what replaces in a quantum plasma the classical thermal velocity. It measures velocity dispersion in the velocity distribution of the plasma. And the Fermi lens is actually what replaces the Debye lens in a quantum plasma, and it's a length scale for electrostatic screening. So that's what plays the role of the Debye lens in the case of quantum plasma. Now, of course, it's easy to understand that the kinetic energy, a typical kinetic energy, now will be given not by the thermal energy, because we are in this regime of very low temperatures, but rather by the Fermi energy. And the interaction energy is still given by the Coulomb energy, because nothing has changed. That's still the main type of interaction. So we can define in the same way the quantum coupling parameter. We can define in the same way a quantum coupling coupling parameter as the ratio of the interaction energy to the kinetic energy. And then we can express it at least in two different forms as the inverse of the number of particles contained in this Fermi volume, we could call it lambda F3 to a certain power 2/3. Or it can also be expressed in this interesting way as the energy of the plasmon H bar omega P divided by the Fermi energy. And if we express explicitly this parameter here, we see that there are a number of constants times the density to the power minus 1/3. So first of all, we see that it doesn't depend on temperature, which is sort of obvious because we are in the very low temperature regime. We also see the interesting thing that the quantum plasma is actually more collisionless at higher densities, because this coupling parameter becomes smaller when the density is higher. It's interaction. E interaction, it's the Coulomb energy. It hasn't changed. This part hasn't changed like in the classical case. Only the kinetic energy has changed. It's not no more the thermal, but the Fermi energy. So now we have defined three dimensionless parameters. I remind you that these were the ratio of the temperature to the Fermi temperature, and then the classical and quantum coupling parameters. Now we can plot the three curves corresponding to these dimensionless parameters equal to 1, which makes the transition when classical to quantum and strongly coupled to collisionless in the two cases of classical and quantum plasmas. So we plot this log T log N diagram for these three curves for electrons. Ions are basically always classical. Quantum effects are only visible in electrons because of the mass difference. So we have this interesting diagram. Now here, this straight line here, that's the T equal TF. So on the left of it, we have the classical regime, and on the right, we have the quantum regime. Then we have the green straight line, which is the classical coupling parameter equal to 1, and the red one, the red line, which is the quantum coupling parameter equal to 1. So we have divided this plane, log T log N plane, in four regions, classical and quantum, and then strongly coupled and collisionless. So here we are in the classical regime and collisionless regime, because it's a high temperature, low density. That's the regime where the Vlasov equation is appropriate. And I've made a number of examples here. It's tokamak, typical tokamak plasma, solar corona, plasma discharge, ionosphere, and interstellar space, etc. So we have all the things that we know. Here, I've written Boltzmann. That's a region of classical plasmas, but large coupling parameters, so strongly coupled plasmas. And that's the area where you can find also formations of atoms and molecules, etc. Then on the right of this black straight line, we have the quantum regime. Now, on the right also of this red vertical line, that's the area here where the quantum coupling parameter is small, because I remind you that the quantum coupling parameter becomes small when the density is large. So it's in this region, it's quantum and collisionless, and that's where we'll be able to model the plasma with the Wigner-type equation. The Wigner equation is sort of the analog of the Vlasov equation in a quantum regime, but we'll come to that later in much more detail. And here you find, for example, white dwarfs that are in this region, quantum and collisionless, like weakly coupled. And you see that the white dwarf is basically can be as hot as a tokamak, but still in the quantum regime, because the density is so high, at 10 to the 38 particles per cubic meter. Then we are left with this area here, which is actually, in principle, is the area where it's quantum, because it's the right of the straight line, and it's strongly coupled, because it's 4GQ larger than 1 here. So I've written Wigner plus collisions in brackets, but in principle, I mean, a Wigner model, which is collisionless, shouldn't be applied here. But we'll see that there's a caveat. And unfortunately, that's the area where ordinary metals and also metal clusters and metallic nanoparticles and thin films, they all fall here because they have this very high density, so they are quantum. But unfortunately, they also have a quantum coupling parameter, which is not that large, sort of order 1, between 1 and 10, something like this. And also, like, Jupiter's core falls into this region, but we are not going to bother with that. So the problem is here that the metals and metallic nanoparticles, metal clusters, they fall in the strongly coupled and quantum region. And the question we ask ourselves, is the Wigner approach appropriate there? Because, you know, in principle, Wigner equation is valid for collisionless plasmas. Now, actually, the situation is not so hopeless, because there's a phenomenon which is known under the name of Pauli blocking, which will help us reduce the collision rate for typical metals and metal clusters, etc. Now, the main idea is that the Pauli exclusion principle inhibits electron-electron collisions when the temperature is low enough. For example, when the temperature is strictly zero, the collision rate, nu, should go to zero. That's simply because electrons are fermions. So if at zero temperature, all the states, all the low-energy states are occupied, and so simply there are no free states for the electrons to go after a collision. And basically this means that the transition probability is zero. All transitions are forbidden, so that makes that that the collision rate must go to zero for zero temperatures. For temperatures that are smaller than the Fermi temperature, but not strictly zero, only electrons that are contained in this, or that have an energy that is contained in this little band here around the Fermi energies, only these electrons can undergo a collision. Now, the collision rate for these electrons, with this energy around here, is given by this nu prime expression there, basically the temperature divided by Planck's constant. This is simply a form of the uncertainty principle, energy times lifetime of a state, which is the inverse of the collision rate. So this product must be of the order of h bar. So we find very easily this expression. Now, this is the collision rate for these electrons, whereas for the electrons seen here, it's basically zero, because all the states are occupied. Now, if we want to compute the average electron-electron collision rate, we need to multiply this result, nu prime here, by the number of electrons that can actually undergo collisions, and that's the electrons contained in between these two red straight lines here. And this number of electrons is proportional to the ratio T over TF. So we multiply nu prime by T over TF, and we obtain the average collision rate for all electrons. And we see, that's interesting, it's proportional to T square, to the square of the temperature. By the way, this is a very well-established relationship, also experimentally. I mean, it's been proven that for low temperature, the electron-electron collision rate behaves as a square of the temperature. If you express it in normalized units by dividing by the electron plasma frequency, we find this result, and we find so that this dimensionless ratio depends, unsurprisingly, on the two dimensionless parameters that we have in a quantum plasma, the quantum coupling parameter and the ratio of the temperature to the Fermi temperature. Now, if we think that, like for metals and metal clusters, we are in the regime where the temperature is small and GQ is large, and that means that this ratio will always be small in the typical metallic regime. So that's the effect, that's this Pauli blocking effect, that the electron-electron collisions are dramatically reduced because of the exclusion principle when we are in this regime of low temperature and large quantum coupling parameter. So the situation is not so hopeless, and we can hope to model also metaclusters, for example, with a sort of Wigner equation. For example, here I've written a few typical metallic parameters. The density is of the order of 10 to the 28 particles per cubic meter, typical room temperature. So that means that the plasma frequency, the electron plasma frequency, is 10 to the 16, is very high, which gives a plasma period of the order of the femtosecond. And then you see that the electron-electron collision rate is basically five order of magnitude smaller than the plasma frequency. So there's a large, I mean, at least for relatively short evolution times, let's say like a few hundred or even a few thousand femtoseconds, a few thousand tau PE, the plasma behaves essentially in a collisionless way. And we also see that this Fermi length is of the order of the angstrom, and the quantum coupling parameter is large, you know, of order 10 in this particular case that I've taken. Now, I haven't heard the beginning of your questions. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. No, it's very important, the plasma frequency, yes. If you people who do solid-state physics, they measure the plasma frequency all the time. Yes, no, it's very important. We see it. It does. This is something that doesn't change from the classical plasma to a quantum plasma. The plasma frequency is still the typical time scale for quantum plasma. For in metals, you know, people, they measure it all the time. You know. So a remark, which is important, I mean, because now it seems too good. It seemed too bad before, but it seems too good now. All these remarks, all that I've said so far, it's valid close to thermodynamic equilibrium. Far from equilibrium, this Pauli blocking effect is less important, so the collision frequency can actually be significantly larger. So we must be careful where we are looking at regimes far from equilibrium. So now I say a few words about different models that you can use to model a quantum plasma. Wigner-Poisson model, actually, the Wigner equation, the Wigner representation of quantum mechanics, it's a representation in the classical phase space. So you define a function, Wigner function, which is defined in term of the wave function psi alpha, of n wave function psi alpha, each with a probability p alpha, in this way. Now, this is an interesting way to represent quantum mechanics. The problem is that the Wigner function is actually not a true probability density because it can take negative values. Nevertheless, it can be used just in the standard classical way in order to compute averages in the standard way, like if we have a quantity A of the phase space variables, and then we can use the Wigner function. Even if the Wigner function itself is not positive, we can still use it to compute the average of A. The Wigner function obeys the following evolution equation here. It's rather complicated. It's sort of similar to the Vlasov equation for the ballistic part, but then for the interaction part, it's a kind of integral operator. And then you see here, phi is the potential. You see here that the main quantum property, which is the non-locality, appears clearly in this equation because you have the potential computed at two different points, x plus or minus lambda over 2, and then you integrate over lambda. So the non-locality of quantum mechanics appears clearly in this equation. If you develop formally the Wigner equations to different order in H-bar, you see that at zeroth order in H-bar, you recover the Vlasov equation, and then you have the first correction, which is second order in H-bar, and then you will have other corrections in all the even powers of the Planck's constant. Right. Yes. Well, in quantum mechanics, you can have pure states or quantum mixtures. If you have only one wave function, if a system is defined by a single wave function, it's a typical pure quantum state. But you can also have mixed states, which are defined by a different wave functions, and to each of them is associated a probability. That's the way you do quantum statistical mechanics. So here it means that the physical system is not that we allow the physical system not to be described by a single wave function, but by n wave functions, each with a probability. So like classical probabilities. Yes, yes, but that's beyond Schrödinger equation. That's a density matrix formalism. When you do quantum statistical mechanics, you suppose that you can have different outcomes, but like different, you have an additional probability, which is just a classical probability. That's the way you do. It's for n-body problems. You have to do it like that. So the system, I mean, it's not defined by a single wave function. It has a certain probability to be in that wave function or another probability to be in another wave function. That's very standard. So I'm not inventing anything here. Now, if you take the Wigner equation and we couple to Poisson equation, like we do with Glaser-Poisson system, we do the Wigner-Poisson system, then we can do the linear approximation and derive a dielectric constant, which appears to have this form here. And you see it's very similar also to the Glaser-Poisson dielectric constant, because actually you see that this is a sort of approximation of the derivative of F naught, the equilibrium with respect to the velocity. You have F naught of V plus something, V minus something, divided by this something. If this something goes to zero, you recover the F naught over dV, which is the standard Vlasov-Poisson dispersion relation. Now we are going to specify this dispersion relation for the case where the equilibrium is given by a homogeneous equilibrium given by a one-dimensional Fermi Dirac at zero temperature, right? One-dimensional Fermi Dirac at zero temperature. It doesn't matter. It's just maybe here. It's just simply function constant equal to one here and zero outside. So if we use this kind of 1D Fermi Dirac at zero temperature for the equilibrium, we obtain this dispersion relation. It's an exact calculation because of the special function there. What is interesting is actually to develop this exact dispersion relation for small wavelengths. And if we do that, then we obtain this result here. That's quite interesting. It's a sort of double expansion in the two parameters, GQ and K lambda F. And you also notice that for GQ going to zero, you actually recover the exact Vlasov-Poisson dispersion relation for this type of equilibrium. And then when GQ is not zero, you have a lot of other terms that will be used later. No, it's not the principal value. It's just like it's a Landau prescription. Yeah, just the same as Vlasov. Now, another typical model to describe quantum plasmas is what I call multi-stream Schrödinger equations. It goes under a different name, Hartree equation or time-dependent local density approximation. It's completely equivalent to the Wigner approach, and it means that we are solving n independent Schrödinger equations coupled to Poisson's equation for each wave function psi alpha. And so, like, it's exactly the same as the Wigner equation, meaning that if you start from this n, you have n Schrödinger equations here, you can construct the Wigner equation, and then you evolve the Wigner equation, you can construct the Wigner function, sorry, then you evolve the Wigner function with the Wigner equation, you obtain a result, then you evolve the original wave functions with the Schrödinger equation, with the n Schrödinger equation, here you obtain a certain result, and these results are the same, meaning that the result on the wave function, if you Wigner transform it, you obtain the result with the Wigner equation. So this is exactly the same. Or each of the psi alpha can actually be thought as representing a stream or a plane wave with the velocity u alpha in this way. So if you look at it, this is actually a stationary equilibrium of this system of equations. I mean, if you linearize around this equilibrium, this homogeneous equilibrium, you obtain the following dielectric constant, which looks very similar to the Dawson's classical multi-stream model. Actually, it's completely recovered if you neglect this quantum part here. If you set h bar to zero, you recover Dawson's dispersion relation. And that's not surprising because the Wigner transform of the psi alpha over there is given by, well, by a typical stream in phase space with the Dirac delta there. Now, these two models, and typically the Wigner-Poisson model, contains both quantum and kinetic effects. We would like to have some reduced models, so like to relax some of these two assumptions. For example, to relax the kinetic assumptions, so to have some equations that are still quantum, but no more kinetic, fluid, for example. And that's what we are going to do in the next slide. So, and quantum fluid equations, they are obtained just as for the classical case by taking moments in velocity space of the Wigner equations. And they are generally valid, like the classical fluid models, for long wavelengths. And then we can do the opposite thing, keep a kinetic model, but not a quantum, but a semi-classical one, and then we just fall on the traditional Vlasov-Poisson equations, the Vlasov-Poisson system. Semi-classical means that the dynamics is classical, the Vlasov equation, but the initial state is normally the ground state of the system, and it has to be taken quantum mechanical. So, for example, a Fermi-Dirac distribution for the electrons. And these models are generally valid for relatively large excitation energies. How long do I have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay. Yes? Sorry, can you say that again?
With boundaries.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't looked at that for the Wigner case. So. But I agree that it's a problem because it's non-local, so you have to be careful. Yeah. So that will be the end of my talk. I will describe this quantum fluid model that you can derive and just give one or two examples. So it's that either you drop the quantum part of the model and then you have a semi-classical Vlasov-Poisson model, or you drop the kinetic part of the model and keep the quantum part and you have a quantum fluid or quantum hydrodynamic model. And the strategy is to take moments of the Wigner equation in velocity space, where you obtain first a continuity equation. That's rather easy. It presents no problems. Then you also obtain, with the first moment of the Wigner function, you obtain a momentum balance equation. But this momentum balance equation will contain some funny pressure terms. Like, well, this is the in red here. It's a standard pressure term. And then it will contain also this funny quantum pressure term. I call it quantum because there's h bar in front. Now, obviously, also in this case, we have a closure problem. We want to closure the system of two equations because we don't know what this pressure here is, and then we have still this problem with this blue term here. We would like to have a closed system of equations for the two global quantities, the density and the average velocity u. Now, our first assumption is very standard, is that the pressure, like in classical physics, the pressure is a function of the density, for example, a polytropic. Second assumption is more tricky. We assume that you can replace all that term with a sum. Well, this sum here is just comes simply by the fact that the Wigner function depends on all this n wave function psi alpha, and we haven't still got rid of this at this stage of the approximation. Actually, there's no approximation here. It's still exact. So the second assumption deals with this term here, and it consists in replacing this expression that comes in here with simply what you would obtain by if you had like the global density instead of the density of each wave function here, so replacing this term with this one, which can be shown to be fairly accurate in the long wavelength regime, in the long wavelength case, long wavelength compared to this lambda f that I've introduced earlier. So if you do that, you end up with this reduced system of fluid equations, the standard continuity equation that I've already written before, and this more complicated momentum balance equation, which is actually just the same as the classical momentum balance equation, with this exotic quantum term appearing here. Now, another interesting thing, this is coupled, of course, to Poisson's equation. An interesting thing is that if you use this transformation here, you introduce this pseudo wave function, this capital psi, defined in this way here, where the phase is related to the velocity here, and the modulus is related to the density n, like this, then you can actually prove that these two equations are completely equivalent to the following nonlinear Schrödinger equation here, where there is an additional nonlinearity coming in this. Coming in this effective potential here. This effective potential, which is related to the pressure P, which was a function of n, as I've shown in the previous slide. For example, for a polytropic, we have the following relationship between these two quantities. And the last thing that I want to show is that an application of this quantum fluid model to a zero temperature, one-dimensional electron gas. If you take 1D degenerate fermion gas, fermion gas described by a velocity distribution, which is like this. The pressure actually is proportional to the cube of the density. Now that's also a standard result that you find in textbooks. It's proportional to the cube of the density. Well, in that case, our effective potential takes this form here, proportional to the square of the density, psi to the fourth. And notice that this is a repulsive potential, which is the manifestation actually of the exclusion principle. Now, if you linearize the fluid model around a homogeneous equilibrium, density equal to the equilibrium density and potential equal to a constant, so no electric field, then you can linearize around this equilibrium, and then you obtain the fluid system, or equivalently the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, yields the following dispersion relation here. Exactly. So that's exact. Linearly, of course. Now, if you look at the full dispersion relation of the full Wigner-Poisson system for an equilibrium given by this distribution here at zero temperature, so that's the formula that we've already seen in normalized units a few view graphs ago, and now I write it here in dimensional units. You obtain this result here, an infinite series of terms. It was this double expansion in GQ and K lambda F. So you see, if you compare these two expressions, you see that they are identical up to fourth order in the wave number. So that means, and then there are other terms here that are not taken into account in the fluid model. So that means that at least at the linear level, the quantum fluid model is a good approximation of the full Wigner-Poisson system in the limit of long wavelength, when k lambda f is much smaller than 1. Okay, I'm not going to... I think I'm concluding here. I just let me show my conclusions because I. Okay, we have shown a number of models that can be used to model quantum model systems that present both quantum effects and self-consistent effects, which are called quantum plasmas. Wigner multi-string Schrödinger quantum hydrodynamics, and also the standard Vlasov-Poisson system can be used in some cases. It's a nice example of the influence of quantum effects on typical nonlinear physics, and it can be like a field where plasma physicists can make some nice contributions, to my opinion. All right. Thank you very much.